I'm Johnny Mack with your daily comedy news. Did you see Stephanie Grisham? She was the White House press secretary for a little while there. She's doing a book tour. Colbert said Stephanie Grisham worked in the White House for 4 years, and as press secretary, she famously never gave a single press conference, but now she's spilling all the tea in her new book, I Just Recently Grew a Spine. Colbert, in the book, Grisham uses a lot of colorful language to describe the administration, calling it a clown car on fire running at full speed into a warehouse full of fireworks, or as Fox News would put it, a brave band of flaming harlequins rushing patriotically into the explosive jaws of danger. Colbert, just a reminder, she knew all about the fiery clown car, and she still called shotgun for 4 years. Colbert, Grisham goes on to write, I can give you endless metaphors. Living in a house that was always on fire, or in an insane asylum where you couldn't tell the difference between the patients and the attendants, or on a roller coaster that never stopped. Colbert said, oh, let me try. Being in his administration is like sliding blindfolded down a 50-foot razor blade into a tub of gin. It's like walking through a minefield led by a baby trying to change his own diaper, driving a manure truck over a cliff into a pit of other manure trucks, deep sea diving surrounded by sharks who won't shut up about winning Wisconsin. Bob Saget spoke to WBTV about his new love for TikTok, his 115 podcasts with various celebrity guests, very specific number there, Bob Saget, his friend Norm MacDonald, and his continued relationship with the cast from Full House. Saget said, everybody gets caught up in the celebrity of it all, but the truth is, we're all proud to say we are close, especially when you work with some of them as kids. I love them all kind of like kids. I was with John Stamos last month doing an event, and John Stamos said, let's do a TikTok. It took 4 hours to make us look like we're bringing in an airplane. We truly love each other, which is nice. Said he also recently spoke with Ashley Olsen from Full House. Saget said, my oldest daughter was one when Ashley and Mary-Kate were two. Say they would come over for parties. I just texted with Ashley last week. We were trying to see each other, but she's been super busy. But they have a great fashion life. Saget said he met Norm MacDonald in Ottawa, Canada, when Norm was 17 years old. Saget said, I didn't know how much I loved him, to be honest with you. And you find that out when you lose someone. Norm and I had a very interesting relationship. He had a voice of his own. He was one of the best stand-ups who ever lived. He was just a really funny man, a very deep-feeling man. Saget said, it's a big job to shut out the outside world and provide some laughs. I think comedians are fourth responders. Weird Al was on Bald Talk. Weird Al has quite nice hair, by the way. But even though Weird Al has longer hair now than in his 80s heyday, he tells the host of Bald Talk there's a bald person within him trying to get out. Given that the guest can't exactly relate to the whole premise of the podcast, Weird Al spends most of the episode of Bald Talk telling the host tales old and new. This from Vulture. So I guess we'll all check out the Bald Talk podcast. I enjoy Weird Al. I will do that. John Cleese spoke to Penn Live. The headline, John Cleese likes to laugh at death literally. John said, I make a lot of jokes about death. People think, isn't that a bit morbid? No. The fact is, at the end of our lives, we die. That's the deal. You can't come down here and have a life and then not die. And that's part of it. I mean, when you talk about black humor, what it's often about is the things that are very real, but we don't talk about them. Things like death, the fact that we get very uptight about discussing it and pretend it doesn't happen, that's not good. So comedians often bring this stuff out into the open air that people are trying to keep repressed, and I think it's better not to repress them. The nice writer at Penn Live said, thank you so much for talking to us. Cleese, oh, please, you don't have to say that. Thank you for allowing me to try and sell tickets. Penn Live, well, I'm a big fan, so I'd like to ask you a couple of questions about your career. I'd be scared to do that. I would be afraid that he'd be like, I've answered these 8 billion times. What are you doing? But apparently John Cleese is very nice. Two of probably the greatest all-time comedy sketches are the Dead Parrot sketch and the Cheese Shop sketch. Cleese, oh, good. I'm glad you included the Cheese Shop. Can I tell you something very funny, Sean? Yes. It's just one of those, I call them one of God's jokes. I went into a restaurant in this hotel, and they have a small room in the middle of the restaurant with glass on either side, and it's called the Cheese Cave. It's where they keep this huge selection of cheeses, right? And I have to tell you, yesterday there was no cheese at all in the Cheese Cave. Isn't that hilarious? It seems to ring a bell. I'll tell you what inspired the Cheese Shop sketch. I had to do some shooting for Monty Python in a harbor on a day when the weather was horrible, and I'm not a very good sailor, so I threw up several times. Once over the cameraman, and when I'd gotten off the boat and onto dry land, Graham Chapman, who's a doctor, said, just rest for a bit. Graham Chapman's a doctor? I didn't know that. Goes to Google. Graham Chapman, doctor. Did you guys know this? I didn't know this. Graham Chapman studied medicine in college and earned an MD, but he practiced medicine for only a few years at Cambridge. He took part in a series of comedy reviews, and shortly after completing his medical studies at St. Bartholomew's Hospital, Graham realized what he wanted to do with his life. He wanted to perform comedy. Huh, learn something new every day, even hosting daily comedy news. Graham, who's a doctor, said, just rest for a bit. We were in the car coming back home, and he said, you really ought to eat something. What do you feel like? And I said, you know, I'd quite like some cheese. Let's see if we could find a shop and buy some. But we couldn't find a shop. And eventually we went past a drugstore. And I said, I wonder if they'll have any cheese in that drugstore. We laughed about that. And he said, well, if they did, it would have to be medicinal cheese. We thought this was quite funny. And we sat down the next morning to write. And we thought, okay, he goes in a drugstore to buy cheese. Why? Because the cheese shop doesn't have any cheese? So that's the sketch we wrote. We never got to the second bit about medicinal cheese. My dad had always been quite funny about all the excuses. If you ask a shop, do you have something? They never say no. They always say, we never have it on a Monday, or there was a big run on it yesterday, or the van broke down, or the cat's eating it. It's very easy to write. And at the time I was writing with Chapman, I was saying, is this funny? Is this really funny? And 2-year-old Chapman was puffing his pipe saying, it's funny, it's funny. I wasn't sure if the other pythons were going to laugh at the read-through. It went quite quiet, and my stomach tightened up. Even among friends, if you tell a joke and they don't laugh, it's embarrassing. And then Michael Palin started to laugh. He absolutely lost it. It was the most wonderful thing I ever saw. He actually slid off his chair onto the floor and started rolling around, holding his sides. That was one of the best moments in Monty Python for me. What a great interview by John. Penn Live said, I also wanted to ask you about Life of Brian. I know when it came out, it caused quite a bit of controversy. Please, it did, but not as much as been written about. We were never seriously worried about it. We went to a famous lawyer and asked, are we going to break the law of blasphemy in the United Kingdom? He said, no, not these days. There were protests in America for the first week. It was only in two cinemas in New York. The queues were going around the block, and these protesters were there with placards saying, Monty Python is the agent of the devil. The local TV stations in New York started covering this and putting little bits into the evening news. A week later, they rang us up in London and said, you don't need to come and do publicity. The protesters have done it all for you. It's a big hit, which I thought was really funny. John talked about how times have changed. People are more sensitive. You see, you can use bad language now. You can use the F word without anyone turning a hair. If you said that in 1963, the traffic stopped. It's funny. There are always things that really upset people, but they vary. What never varies is the fact that there are things you can say to stop traffic. If you want big laughs, you need to make jokes about things that people are a little anxious about, like death or sex. If you can make a joke in an area where there's anxiety, a little bit of taboo, then you get huge laughs. I find now that this business about oversensitivity to jokes, it's based on a misapprehension. All humor is essentially critical. If you have a person like Christ who's kind and wise and generous and all the good things, how can they be funny? There's nothing funny about that. The only funny things about human beings is when they fall below the standards, when they're permanently angry for no reason, like Basil Fawlty and Fawlty Towers. W.C. Fields said, anyone who hates dogs and children can't be all bad. I find this very funny. The trouble with the wokesters is they don't understand that there can be affectionate teasing as well as nasty teasing, which is horrible. Now, nasty teasing is actually unforgivable. It makes people feel rotten about themselves, but a lot of people will tease their friends because of the affection. In England, if you're very rude to someone, it means you love them. You wouldn't be rude to someone you didn't love. That would be rude. I think the woke people lack much a sense of irony. They think words offend people, whereas the meaning of words is entirely dependent on the context. I gotta tell you, there's a lot more here than I thought there was when I dove in. I'm gonna save the rest of it for maybe next weekend. Let's take a break and I'll tell you about Paul McCartney. From the Times of Israel, your home for comedy news, Paul McCartney was the guest on BBC Radio 4's This Cultural Life. Paul talked about a comedy that he wrote with John Lennon. Got your attention? Sure. McCartney said the 4-page story titled Pilchard was recently unearthed. He said it revolves around a mother and daughter discussing the mysterious lodger who lives in an upstairs room of their home. Paul said, for years I've been telling people that me and John wrote a play. It's quite a funny thing called Pilchard, and it's about the Messiah, actually. We were going to have this character, the person upstairs who never comes in, and the play is just people talking about him in his terrible crisis. Oh, our Pilchard, you know, he's taken a turn. He's born again. He really thinks he's the Messiah. He's upstairs praying. That was the way we were going to go, but we couldn't figure out how playwrights did it. Saeed Jones, writing for GQ. You ever hear the one about the famous black comedian who disappeared when he realized that white people watching him were laughing a little too hard and likely for the wrong reasons? Deal with white people long enough, especially the ones who've enjoyed enough episodes of The Wire and Wu-Tang albums to believe they're in on the joke, and you can easily understand why Dave Chappelle walked away from $50 million rather than tape a third season of Chappelle's Show for Comedy Central. He was fighting for his life. In 2012, 8 years into his absence from public life, it seemed like Chappelle had won. C. Jones writes, Maybe you watch comedy specials to endure them, but I watch them to have a good time, and I stop watching them when that's no longer the case. Chappelle argues this makes me too sensitive, too brittle. I just think I have better things to do than watch a stand-up set that could just as well have been a Fox News special. As a gay black man, even when I'm watching a comedy special, my identity is inconveniently present. It's so annoying. I asked my queerness to chill in the other room so I could watch The Closer in peace, but had no such luck. Watching Chappelle contort himself to justify ashy ideas about gender, queerness, and identity is harrowing. But the only thing more brutal than someone saying hurtful crap is someone saying hurtful crap moments after making you laugh, moments after cracking you up in a way that's both fun and deeply needed, moments after making you feel like you got free together. America has only gotten better at trying to kill me. Laughter's no joke, which makes the betrayal, years in the making at this point, all the more devastating. I feel like a fool to have rooted for Dave Chappelle for so long. Things were easier when the men who wanted to hurt me just said so at the jump. Last weekend, I was bar hopping in my neighborhood with friends. There was a whole gang of us, white, black, Persian, gay, straight, trans, moisturized, unmoisturized, stoned, drunk, and sober, and we were vibing. As we crossed the street, colored by the sound of our laughter and the booze lacing our blood, we were free as it's possible to feel in these disjointed, apocalyptic days. And then two black men standing on the corner. Kat called my friend. She kept her eyes ahead, pretending like she didn't hear them because a woman, especially a black trans woman, can get killed for saying no to a man who's decided she owes him her time. The men standing on the same street as I marched up and down countless times last summer, chanting, "Whose streets, our streets?" They yelled, "That's a man, that's a man," as we all walked away. That's the gag, Dave. I thought when you got free, if you decided to come back to us, you'd find a way to help us feel more free too. I believe that's what laughter does. It loosens up. Helps us shake ourselves free. But watching you spew BS, just as hurtful as the words these men hurled at us last weekend, I didn't feel like I was being set free. I felt like I'd just been stabbed by someone I once admired, and now he was demanding that I stop bleeding. That's your comedy news for today. Follow the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. See you back here tomorrow.